Radio Prague News.
The government has approved a proposal to decrease the salaries of state officials by 5%. A defense ministry proposal for the structure of foreign military missions over the coming years has also been approved. And the Czech branch of the Salvation Army says that homelessness in the Czech Republic has climbed significantly in the last year. The government has approved a proposal to decrease the salaries of state officials by 5%. The cuts affect the salaries of parliament deputies, ministers, and state prosecutors until 2014. The salaries of judges will be decreased only for 2011. The basic salaries of parliament deputies and senators should be roughly 52,000 crowns per month, while the basic pay for ministers will drop to 107,000 crowns. Judges and prosecutors are protesting the cut. The Czech Constitutional Court recently overturned a 4% reduction in the salaries of judges in the Czech Republic, citing a previous verdict which declared that the salaries of judges had to be stable and could not be cut. The government on Wednesday also approved a defense ministry proposal on foreign missions until the year 2013. The number of soldiers in Afghanistan is set to increase to 720 next year before being reduced to 640 in 2012. The majority of the force will be committed to the provincial reconstruction team in the province of Logar. Meanwhile, forces in Kosovo will be gradually reduced with the option of returning them in case of need. Czech pilots will return to guarding the airspace of the Baltic states by 2012. Defense Minister Alexander Vondra said that 2 billion crowns should cover the missions for next year. The Czech branch of the Salvation Army says that homelessness in the Czech Republic has climbed significantly in the last year. A spokesman for the church told the press on Wednesday that, according to its estimates, the situation had worsened, particularly in Prague, where it believes homelessness increased by a fourth in the first half of 2010. Every fourth or fifth family, it said, was indebted. The Salvation Army is celebrating 20 years since it renewed its operations in the Czech Republic, where it was previously active from 1919 to 1950. It currently works in 9 cities in the country. Now, turning briefly to the weather, conditions over the coming days are expected to be overcast, with light rain in places and daytime temperatures of around 16 degrees Celsius. I'm Christian Falvey, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. My name is Jan Richter. In today's program, the prosecution in one of the country's worst cases of racial violence has asked for exemplary punishment. The government's advisory economic board has come up with ideas of how to curb corruption in public procurement. And later, we test the first ever car-free map of Prague.
It's a map of places, not of transportation, but map of places where you can stand for a while, where you can enjoy the city, where you can sit.
All that and more coming up, so please stay tuned. A regional court in Ostrava, where four neo-Nazis are standing trial for an arson attack against a Roma family, has come under siege by the Czech and foreign media. In one of the final hearings on Tuesday, the state attorney demanded prison sentences of up to 25 years for what she says was premeditated, racially motivated attempted murder. Daniela Lazarova has been following the story and joins me now in the studio. Daniela, when can we expect a verdict, and are we looking at exemplary punishment here?
Well, this case is clearly exceptional in many ways. Just to give you a quick rundown, the court is dealing with a Molotov cocktail attack on the home of a Roma family in April of last year. It took place late at night and left three people badly injured, including a two-year-old girl who suffered third-degree burns to 80% of her body. So it was a very, very serious case that shocked the nation. The attack met with widespread condemnation and received international media publicity. as shocking evidence of the racial intolerance that Roma face in this country. It also jolted the authorities into action, unlike other arson attacks on Romani families, and there have been plenty of them. In this case, the police caught the suspects and filed charges relatively quickly, and the court case itself has received intense media attention. In fact, the closing hearings are being broadcast live on Czech public television. The state attorney, the prosecutor, as you said, has demanded extraordinary punishment of up to 25 years for three of the neo-Nazis and a sentence of up to 15 years for the fourth, who alone admitted to the crime and expressed regret over his actions. Now, on Czech scale, that would indeed be exemplary punishment, but we'll have to wait for the final verdict, which is expected within the fortnight. Within a fortnight, in fact, we've heard October the 20th is to be the date.
Now, when you say that only one of the four suspects has admitted to the crime, what line has the defense counsel taken then?
Well, the court heard plenty of evidence linking the four youths to neo-Nazi activities. The ringleader brazenly attended the hearings wearing a T-shirt with neo-Nazi symbols and refused to say a single word. Two of his accomplices tried to defend their actions by saying they had believed the house to be uninhabited, a line of defence dismissed by the prosecution on the grounds that they had first turned off the water supply to ensure that the house's inhabitants could not put out the fire. Their defence lawyers are seeking to get them released on the grounds of what they call a lack of enough incriminating evidence. And it's true that at least one witness refused to take the stand after receiving death threats. But given what the police have assembled, together with the admission of one of the neo-Nazis, that should be enough to see them all imprisoned for many years.
This arson case led the authorities to beef up the fight against the far right. Is this verdict expected to serve as a deterrent against further racist violence?
Well, that is indeed what we're hearing. And I think that an exemplary verdict is what the public wants to see in this case. But observers are warning against excessive optimism here. They're pointing out that there are dozens, if not hundreds, of cases of racial discrimination and violence that do not get enough attention and that do not end up in court. And they say that until that happens, the situation will not improve.
And finally, Daniela, how is the worst victim of this brutal attack faring?
Well, she's doing as well as can be expected under the circumstances. She's undergone close to 20 operations and skin grafts in the past year, had two fingers amputated, and her parents say she's still very traumatised. Doctors say it's a miracle she survived at all, and clearly she's a fighter, but it's obvious that the attack has marked her for life.
Thank you very much, Daniela Lazarova, for that. We'll be, of course, following the final hearing in this case and report on the verdict when it comes. Now, the Czech government's Economic Advisory Council, known as NERV, has come up with a set of measures to curb widespread corruption in public procurement. The council proposes, among other things, to simplify the entire procurement process and to make it more transparent. Also, criteria for companies taking part in public tenders should be limited to ensure greater competition. Last year, the state spent some 630 billion crowns, or around $35.5 billion, on public procurement. The government hopes that saving even a percent or two would significantly boost the strained public finances. The state should also make sure that all public procurement projects are essentially needed. I spoke to economist and NERV member Pavel Kohout about the proposed changes.
There are many large projects which are started without an expert opinion. So we propose that there is an expert board which would conclude whether such a project is or is not necessary, especially infrastructure projects. The other proposal is focused on the so-called criteria for admission. The admission criteria very frequently used filter which limits competition. If there is a public tender, it is possible to shape the admission criteria in a very flexible way so that only a handful of competitors is admitted to the competition itself, or even one single competitor, which effectively limits competition to the point of zero. So the NERF has proposed to almost abolish admission criteria, except for two, the criterion of financial stability of the applicant and the criterion of expertise. The applicant must prove that the firm has the necessary expertise to conduct the project.
You have also proposed much more transparency in the whole process of public procurement. How should that work?
Well, transparency is generally a very powerful way to limit waste in public spending. And there are examples of some small Czech cities or towns which have conducted all tenders by using internet auctions. And if this technique were used on a nationwide scale, it would make the public procurement process much more transparent, and the competition would be enabled in all tenders.
Prime Minister Petr Nečas said he would like to see these changes implemented as soon as possible. When do you think that public procurement could be run according to these principles that you proposed?
Well, assuming that there would be some changes in the existing laws, it might take maybe 6 months. That's a very rough estimate, actually, because I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a politician. But I believe that the next year, by this time, by the autumn next year, the most basic changes should have been finished.
I was talking there to economist Pavel Kohout from the Czech government's Economic Council, NERV. Prague has emerged almost unscathed from the ravages of the 20th century, all except one, that is. Car ownership has rocketed since the fall of communism. Huge amounts of the city's budget go towards building elaborate new road systems, and the streets are often thick with exhaust fumes. However, one civic initiative is trying to redefine how people see and use their city, and as well as promoting cycling and other alternatives to the combustion engine, they've also produced the first car-free map of Prague. Rob Cameron tried it out.
It's a grey and rather miserable afternoon here in Prague, an afternoon like any other really. It's a working day, lots of people around, lots of cars in the streets. Czechs have a love affair with the car, I think it's fair to say. After 1989, the number of cars owned by people in this country jumped enormously, and it's still the transport of choice for most people in this country. One group that's trying to change that is an organisation called Automat, and one of the ways they want to change that is by promoting other ways of transport, other means of transport, promoting more cycling, for instance, or even just walking around the city. One man from Automat, Bratislav File, he's come up with a map, and the map is rather different to a regular road map of Prague, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a first map for unmotorized users of the city.
Unmotorized users, yeah, of the city, so cyclists and pedestrians.
Yeah, mostly for pedestrians, a little bit for cyclists. It's not the main content of the map. And first of all, it's a map of places, not of transportation, but map of places where you can stand for a while, where you can enjoy the city, where you can sit, where you can walk in nice environment.
Right, and one thing it does not show, yeah, is information for people who are driving, people in their cars. So nothing about parking, nothing about one-way streets and all this sort of thing.
Yeah, there are some grey areas, which means there are busy roads or parking places, but this, it's just uninteresting. It looks uninteresting in this map, and it was our aim.
Okay, that's a very good idea. So where are we now exactly?
We are in border of Žižkov and Vinohrady in Slavíkova Street.
Slavíkova Street, right, and there it is on the map, so we can see.
We are here.
Yep.
And you can see that this street has a green line over. It means that there are trees in the street.
Okay, so when the street is colored green, it means, yeah, that it's a tree-lined street.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's take a walk a bit using the map, walking along Slavíčka by now. Svatý, are you from Prague yourself?
Yeah, I live here for a whole life.
And do you have a sense that things are beginning to change in the way that people feel and think about their city?
I am not very sure yet, because there are some minor changes, and yes, there are many new places which are run by people which are nice, so it's better, but not from city authorities. It's still the planning of streets is still very car-centric, I think.
Right, so the people want change, but the people in power, the politicians, are less keen on that change.
Yeah. Maybe there will be election now, so maybe some change will come. I don't know.
Vratislav Filler ending that report by Rob Cameron. In the past, Prague had fewer cars and many more cafes. Café society was a reality in Prague and many other Czech towns and cities during a golden era before the First World War and between the wars. There were hundreds of such cafés, with the latest edition often trying to outdo its predecessor in luxury and splendor. In this edition of Spotlight, Chris Johnstone visits one of the most famous of these cafés, the Café Louvre.
Prague's great cafes were in their heyday often architectural, artistic and literary landmarks. The Czech capital was awash with them. And in an age before mobile phones, television, radio and central heating, they provided a crucial point for contacts to be made, ideas exchanged, or where you could just go to keep warm and enjoy luxurious surroundings, nursing an even colder cup of coffee and avoiding facial contact with the waiter. In time and concept, they are far removed from today's counterparts, the likes of Starbucks and Coffee Heaven. The Café Louvre was a relatively late arriver on the scene, with the famous Slavia already established two decades earlier down the street. The first Prague café is thought to date from 1711 and was established by a writer on the Malostrana side of the city. By 1808, there were 26 cafés listed following a city survey. This compares with around 400 pubs and 40 of what passed for wine bars. Yet as the current manager of the café, Mr. Silvio Spohr, remarks, the Café Louvre did try to differentiate itself from the rest when it opened its doors in 1902. First of all, it was the biggest café in the whole Austro-Hungarian Empire, covering several floors and boasting 800 rooms. As Mr. Spohr explains, there were other innovations as well.
Určitě tam byla snaha o progres. Třeba zajímavostí je elektrifikace.
Certainly there was an attempt to make progress. Perhaps one of the most interesting aspects is the electrification of the place. This was the first electrified café, that is to say that it was no longer lit by candles but by electric bulbs. There was also a step in the direction of women's emancipation. It is an interesting fact that this was the first place where ladies could get together. The first ladies' salon was here. Until then, ladies met in so-called salons at home. It was not common for ladies to be seen in society in cafes or restaurants, certainly not alone. They had to be accompanied. So the Louvre had the first salon where ladies could meet.
V kavárně Louvre byl první dámský salon, kde se mohly ženy scházet.
The café soon became a meeting place for intellectuals, artists and writers, for example being chosen as the fortnightly meeting place of the German Philosophical Circle. Mr. Spohr says this was more a chance than a deliberate development.
Nehledejme v tom intelektuál a snahu o podpořit...
We did not seek intellectuals or attempt to help them. That sort of came about on its own. The overriding principle was commercial. This was a business, that means providing and selling coffee. The idea at that time was that you offered attractive rooms in the style of a country estate or palace, and for the price of a coffee, people could experience that luxury. That was the principle behind cafes. In order for people to be willing to pay a relatively high price for coffee, they had these beautiful period rooms.
A v té místnosti za cenu jedné kávy si člověk mohl užít toho luxusu.
There were more prosaic reasons than enjoying luxurious surroundings for some of these intellectuals.
Řekl bych, že především v zimních měsících
I would say that in winter, intellectuals spent most of their time here. They would not spend a whole day in one cafe, but rather there were a few locations which they frequented and stayed at. In short, heating for homes was not affordable for many. Cafes offered a warm space, a relatively quiet environment, a few daily newspapers which you could read, and you could meet certain hygienic or physical needs on the spot and meet people that you needed to.
For some intellectuals, cafes were working places and places where they could be called on the phone. They also served as revolving meeting points.
Stalo se to I jistou adresou, kde je někdo mohl najít. Zkrátka se vědělo.
It was a certain address where you could be sure to find someone. In short, it was known that this or that writer would say, be in this cafe on Wednesday afternoon, and that on Thursday afternoon he would be at another cafe or restaurant. In order that people could be found, they had a certain weekly list of places where people could be found at certain intervals.
The list of the Café Louvre's intellectual clients is long, but a few names stand out.
Naturally, there were a lot, and I'll just recall the best known. Franz Kafka, who together with Max Brod was a member of a discussion group from which Max Brod was eventually expelled. Kafka also left in sympathy with his friend. There are letters saying how they got together in the cafe on Ferdinand Avenue, later Narodny Tsida in the Louvre. It is very interesting that Albert Einstein, during the year that he lived in Prague, visited and met his friends here. Karel Čapek visited the Louvre Café. There are many, but those three are the best known, and we use them for publicity purposes.
Franz Kafka and Max Brod spent at least part of their time at a rival café, Arco, with the habitués known as Arconauts. The café can still be seen on the corner of Hybernska and Lajdine streets, not far from what is now Masarykovy train station. While it survives, it's run down and in a sorry state. Czech artists and writers were also frequenting a handful of cafés, mostly located a stone's throw away from the Louvre in the 1920s and 1930s. These included the Narodny Kavarna, Union, Metro, Slavia and Tumovka cafés. Some of the clients included Nobel Prize-winning writer Jaroslav Seifert, poet František Halas, and writer of plays, screenplays, and film director Vladislav Vančura. At the entrance to the Louvre, there is now a map together with photos of some of the 20 great Prague cafés from the Golden Age, with a commentary about them in Czech. While the café competition was tough, there seemed to be enough customers to go round until the Great Depression struck in the 1930s.
Až do období krize to byl vlastně zlatý věk kaváren.
Until the Depression, it was the golden age for cafes. It was incredible. Some streets, if you knocked down the walls, then you would have been able to go from one end to another just through cafes. In the main streets, most of the first floors were devoted to cafes, with the commercial space on the ground floor. On Wenceslas Square, Narodny Tsida or Na Příkopě, it was one cafe after another. We're talking about hundreds of cafes which, due to the economic crisis, war, and communism, disappeared. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of them.
The war brought its specific ravages, with some cafes reserved for Germans. Intellectuals, in any case, were not one of the Nazi regime's favorite groups, whether they spoke German or Czech. For the Louvre, the fact that it was a favourite hangout for German speakers did not improve its post-war prospects. Mr. Spohr, again.
Scházeli se tady především Němci v tom období před rokem 48.
It was mostly Germans that got together here in the period before 1948. It was probably more of a German café, because cafés were divided along social and linguistic lines. So it was a German café and a café for the well-off. As well as the intellectuals working, there were also gaming tables during the night, so the Louvre was a symbol of bourgeois life which was liquidated in 1948. It was with great gusto that the furniture was thrown out of the windows into the street below.
In the period afterwards, there were several ideas what to do with the massive space. One, apparently, was for a non-alcoholic and non-smoking cafe. Another was for a Slovak-style meeting place and restaurant. Nothing came of these. At the end of the communist era in 1989, the space was being used as offices. Restoration, with the initial costs at around 200 million crowns, financed from loans at exorbitant rates of interest, took place in the early 1990s, with the Louvre reopened in 1992. While seeking to maintain the flavour of the past, the current café is a much smaller version than the original, which even had a cellar wine bar.
Rekonstrukce byla velmi složitá, protože těch 50, skoro 50 let...
Renovation was very difficult because the café had not been used for about 50 years. It was necessary to do everything from the start, the plumbing, electricity, gas, and work out the logistics because it was not possible to use all the original space. The original kitchens were on another floor, and I weighed up the possibility of using a lift, but we had to use other rooms and salons as cloakrooms for the employees and office space and so on. All that took up quite a lot of space. The opening was accompanied by a surge of enthusiasm and anticipation, but we waited 3 years before we achieved the number of clients we needed to keep going. That is today around 1,000 people a day who come in to the Café Louvre.
Dnes je to cirka 1,000 lidí denně, které přijdou do kavárny Louvre.
Many tourists come to get a taste of past grandeur, but the café's priority is more regular customers who will keep on paying the bills.
That edition of Spotlight by Chris Johnstone was first broadcast this August. I'm afraid that's all we have time for here at Radio Prague. From myself, Jan Richter, and all of us here, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye. Thank you.